You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 100.5 FM.
One of the most troubling effects of the global recession of 2007-2008 is the effect on young workers. By 2009, youth unemployment had reached crisis proportions, according to the International Labour Organization, and the situation hasn't gotten any better. Earlier this year, the ILO projected that unemployment rates would stay at roughly the same level until at least 2016. Karen Foster is a research associate with the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives and a postdoctoral fellow at St. Mary's University in Halifax. She wrote a recent report for the CCPA, and she joins me on the line this morning. Hello, Karen.
Hi, good morning.
Now, we're used to hearing regular updates on the unemployment rate in the media, but it's never broken down into age groups. Why do you think it's important to look at unemployment among young workers?
Well, you know, it's important to look at unemployment for any age group. Wherever there are people who want to work and can't find work, it's a big deal. But with young workers in particular, we do know that the effects of unemployment early in life tend to last well into adulthood. So young people struggle to catch up with their peers in terms of earnings and job stability and career progression. Long after they've faced spells of unemployment.
And when we're talking about young people, what age are we talking about?
Well, my report looked at two different breakdowns. One of them was the usual 15 to 24 age bracket, but then I also looked at the numbers for just workers under 30 in general.
Now, there's a graph in your report that shows that the unemployment rate among young workers is at least double the overall unemployment rate in the 34 countries of the OECD. How does Canada compare with the average?
Canada's unemployment rate for young people is not that bad when you look at it in comparison with, well, you know, the U.S. is maybe 3 percentage points higher than ours. And then when you look at Greece and Italy, they're at like 45 and 50% unemployment for young people. So in OECD countries anyway, it's really not that bad, but it still is, like you said, double the unemployment rate for people of older people.
And it's growing.
It is growing, yeah. From 2001 to 2011, it's grown 2 percentage points.
Now, you also look at youth underemployment. What do you mean by that term?
I mean people who are employed in non-permanent jobs. So there are kind of two definitions for underemployment. One of them is working a job that is, you know, lower than your credentials or your training. But this definition that I'm working with is just people who are employed in jobs that aren't permanent, and so they don't come along with the benefits and the career progression that permanent jobs come with.
So it makes me think of the term muck jobs when you talk about that kind of jobs, but I guess it goes beyond just working in the service industry. Are we talking also about contract employment or term employment?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where it's really, other studies have shown that that's where non-permanent jobs have actually grown, is in, you know, government now offering more short-term contracts. Engineers are facing this as well, people in the health industry, teachers, and particularly in my field in higher education, the use of contract labor has really expanded.
Now, people might say to you, well, that's the kind of job you have when you're young. You know, it's like later on in life it'll change. What would you say to people who say that?
I would say maybe. There are two things to keep in mind, though. The first is that, as I said before, we know that these spells of, you know, low wage or low benefits employment do have an impact later in life, and also that we know that the rates are rising of contract employment, non-permanent employment. So, you know, someone who says these are just the types of jobs that you have when you're young, it doesn't apply. It didn't apply to people before. We know that it's rising, and the question is it going to keep rising and at what point do we say, you know, well, 20% is too much, or 30% is too much?
Now, you say that there are effects later in life. So you look at a young person who has this kind of job when they're in their early 20s. How would their life look different 20 years later than if they had gone into some kind of secure full-time job with benefits? What kind of effect, if you break it down a little bit?
Well, there could be a number. Like if you're working these contract jobs early in life and then you don't start a permanent job until later, say you're getting into a pension fund, you wouldn't have been paying into that pension fund for those, you know, that first decade where you're only working temporary contracts. Or you may have to delay big purchases like buying a house because you can't count on, you know, next year's job still being around. You know, there are all kinds of detrimental impacts in that way.
What difference does it make if you have a university degree?
I did do the breakdowns on that, and it looks like people with a university degree, young people, are slightly better off in terms of getting permanent employment. Like they're about twice as likely as other young workers to be in a full-time permanent job. If you don't have a post-secondary degree, you are way more likely to work a part-time permanent job, which could just indicate that these are people who are in university or in college still. That's something that the next report that I'm working on is going to break down further to see, you know, exactly who are these people who are working part-time permanent jobs or part-time non-permanent jobs, rather.
It is interesting because I think it, often casually when we're talking about the situation, we focus on the people with degrees who are working in Starbucks, but without looking at the fact that the person next to them who maybe doesn't have a degree is also working there and maybe faces a very different life trajectory.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, because for some people, these are, you know, people who have post-secondary degrees, it's probably just going to be a temporary setback. You know, it'll just take them a bit longer to find work, and you know, we'll still have those impacts later in life, but not as bad as someone who doesn't have a degree, doesn't have hope of entering a career where there is some form of career progression.
Now, one of the positive notes that you strike in your report is that there's an increase in union coverage among young workers at a time when unionization amongst older workers is declining steeply. Was that finding a surprise to you?
That was a huge surprise, actually, because a lot of the union activity right now is aimed at you know, getting young workers unionized and on board. And what my analysis showed was that the under 30 crowd is actually, their union participation and union coverage is going up, whereas it's the and that's, you know, whether you've got a post-secondary degree or not, whereas the 30 and older crowd, their union membership is declining rapidly or, I guess, significantly anyway.
Now, we've focused in our conversation so far on the effect on the young workers who are experiencing this, but what do you think the effect is on society as a whole if you have these high rates of youth unemployment and underemployment?
Well, economically, it's bad. It's bad when, you know, high unemployment is bad sort of across the board, and when it's young people in particular, those are some of your prime spending years. You know, there's so many products that are targeted toward young people, and if they don't have money and if they don't have a reliable source of money, they're not gonna spend it. You know, so you see there are now car companies that are just scratching their heads and trying to figure out how you get this so-called generation to buy a vehicle. And they can't do it because generally they don't have the money. So, you know, it has a big effect on really specific industries. You know, if people aren't investing and the economy's not growing, and that's bad for everybody.
Now, what do you think needs to change to address this problem?
Well, I think we need to look at how we compensate non-permanent work. I mean, this is something that employment regulations could address by, for example, legislating that you have to offer the same sort of benefits packages to non-permanent workers, or that you can't, I think we do already have a law where you can't string people out in successive contracts without eventually offering them a permanent job, which is, you know, a really good thing. But surely there are employers who are, you know, just doing the bare minimum in that regard, or, you know, stringing people out as long as they possibly can. So employment regulations, which are usually a provincial jurisdiction, you know, they could go a long way toward addressing some of these things. But, you know, the other thing that the report really does is just says, you know, is this really what we want, a move toward non-permanent work? And if so, are we comfortable with the consequences?
Well, thanks so much for talking to me today, Karen.
Well, thanks for having me.
I've been speaking with Karen Foster. She is a research associate with the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives and a postdoctoral fellow at St. Mary's University in Halifax. And she wrote the report, Youth Employment and Underemployment in Canada. And you can find that at policyalternatives.ca.